You're listening to the Author Inside You podcast, a weekly podcast designed to motivate you to finish writing a book, choose a publisher, and have your work build an audience. Keep listening if you're looking to get propelled into the next chapter of your life. And now, it's the Author Inside You podcast with your host, Leah and Matt Rafferty.
Hello, and welcome to the Author Inside You podcast. I'm Matt Rafferty.
And I'm Leah Rafferty.
Joining us today is Steve Snyder, author of Shot Down, the true story of pilot Howard Snyder and the crew of the B-17 Susan Ruth. After retiring, Steve began his quest to learn more about World War II experiences of his father and his father's crew. It became his passion, and after 4.5 years of dedicated research, Steve's book received 25 National Book Awards, and it's an Amazon number one bestseller. Welcome, Steve. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Appreciate the invitation.
Well, Steve, growing up, did your dad talk about his World War II experiences with you?
A little bit. Like most World War II veterans, though, he didn't talk about it too much. I knew the basics growing up, but it wasn't until I retired in 2009 that I really had the time to delve into my dad's war history in more detail. There was a memorial, though, that was built to my dad and his crew in the little village of Mackinaws, Belgium, where he bailed out and where his plane came down. That occurred in 1989.
Oh, okay.
And he went over for the dedication with the three other living crew members at the time and their wives. And there he was reunited with all these Belgian people that hit him after he bailed out, and he saw homes and houses where he was hidden.
Wow.
And that brought it all back, and he started talking about it after that. Yeah, his plane, the Susan Ruth, which was named after my oldest sister, Susan Ruth Snyder,
oh, really?
Who was 1 year old at the time he went overseas. They were shot down over the French-Belgian border on February 8th of 1944. Five of the crew made it back home, but five of them did not. Fortunately for me, my dad was one of the five, or I wouldn't be here.
Yeah, wow.
And then how did you go about researching it?
Well, I was very fortunate that my parents had kept a lot of information from during the war. My mother had all the letters that my dad wrote to her while he was stationed in England. And while my dad was missing in action and being hidden by the Belgium underground, he wrote a diary about his plane being shot down that is absolutely riveting.
Wow.
And I just became fascinated with the story of my dad and his crew. And like you mentioned, it became my passion. I started reading book after book about the air war over Europe. I went on the internet and spent countless hours doing research, downloading declassified military documents. I joined a number of World War II organizations, started going to reunions, listening to veterans tell their stories. And finally, after 3.5 years into my research, I just came to the conclusion that the story of my dad and his crew was so compelling and so unique, it needed to be told. People needed to know about it. So I decided to write a book.
Wow. So you researched for 3.5 years without writing, without the idea that you were definitely going to write a book.
Yeah, when I started my research, I had no intention at all of writing a book. And then as I got into it, I go, well, maybe I'll put together something, you know, for the immediate family and for maybe relatives of his other crew members. It just kept going and building and building. Then I decided that I wanted to write, you know, a professionally done book and get it published and out to readers.
Well, at first, was it overwhelming with all the information you had? Were you like, how do I organize this? Or did you see a pattern right away?
I kind of saw a pattern right away. It's kind of a linear story. I based it really on my dad's letters.
Okay.
That began when he was in pilot training and then followed the crew during that and then following them to England, to their base in England. Because my dad was really candid in his letters. He wrote about what bombing missions were like, what life was like on the air base, what life was like in England and London at the time, escapades of him and his crew.
That's so wonderful.
So I just kind of started writing it and following his story. But then I probably wouldn't have written a book if it wasn't for two Belgium gentlemen, Dr. Paul Delahaye and Jacques Lalot, who were young boys during the war and greatly affected by it. And they became local historians later in life, and they interviewed all these members of the Belgium underground about events that took place involving my dad and his crew, and they documented their testimony. And they gave me unbelievably detailed information about events that have been lost forever without their dedicated research. So I owe them a great deal, because the first half of the book kind of builds up to the day that the plane was shot down. And then the second half of the book is all about what happened afterwards. So what happened afterwards, they is greatly based on the information they provided me, in addition to what my dad told me and other members of the crew who survived.
Mm-hmm. That's great that you found that resource in those two gentlemen. That's fantastic.
Yeah, the other great resource I found, too, was Hans Berger, the German Luftwaffe pilot that shot down my dad's plane.
Oh, really?
I can't believe that. You found the man who shot the plane down. Tell us about that.
Yeah, actually, the gunners on my dad's plane shot him down at the same time, so they really shot each other down. It's kind of a funny story. When I was doing my research, one day my wife asked me, well, why don't you try to find the pilot that shot down your dad's plane? And I was thinking to myself, you know, she doesn't know what she's talking about. That's it could be impossible right. to do. What a crazy, dumb idea. But like a good husband, I did what she told me to do.
That's funny.
And lo and behold, I found Hans Berger, and he became a translator after the war, so he speaks perfect English.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and he gave me some wonderful insight that's in the book about what it was like to go up against the 8th Air Force. He's still alive today. He's 95 years old and lives in Munich, Germany.
Wow.
And he was shot down. Isn't that crazy that he was shot down, your father was shot down, and they both basically fell out of the sky and lived to tell about it?
Exactly.
Wow. So have you had any experience writing prior to this?
No, none at all. I have had no writing background or training whatsoever. I always kind of liked to write, though. My 40-year career was in sales and sales management. But I liked writing marketing material and pre-approach letters and different things like that. So I kind of had, I guess, an innate ability to do it. My biggest challenge was just putting everything together.
Did you take a course or watch videos or anything on what you need to do to put together a book?
No, not at all. And it's funny that you say that, because when I finished my manuscript and then submitted it to professional editors, I thought they were just going to slash and burn and, you know, delete stuff and move things around, and they hardly touched it.
That's a great feeling.
They just pretty much, you know, did some grammar and some spelling, and I'm super surprised. But they said, no, you're a good writer. We didn't really change anything. They chopped it up more into additional chapters. I didn't have as many chapters. They thought it would be better. So that's one thing they did. But the text really and the writing they didn't touch.
And how did you find the editors that you used?
Well, after I finished my manuscript, then now what do I do? How am I going to get this thing published? And I investigated various avenues, and I came across a book consultant, Judith Bryles is her name, has her company is called The Book Shepherd. And so I worked with her on getting the thing published. She kind of advised me along the way. And I ended up forming my own publishing company.
Oh, wow.
Seabreeze Publishing LLC, named for the street that I live on in Seal Beach, California. And then I contracted with independent professionals for all the associated services, such as editing, cover design, interior layout, printing the book, fulfillment. I used a book printing company in Michigan, and then the fulfillment house I use is in Indiana.
Well, that's nice. Everyone around the country.
The other people were pretty much located around Denver, Colorado. So I kind of took a different approach and a different avenue to get my book published. But I just felt more comfortable doing it that way. Felt kind of comfortable and secure that it would really be a professionally done book and one that would appeal to the public.
What was the advantage of starting your own production company?
Well, I had complete control. For one thing, there's over 200 time period photographs in my book, and a normal publisher would never allow that many photographs to be in it. And I wanted them spaced throughout the book. When you're reading about somebody or a place, that picture of that person or that location comes up. You know, most books, they have all the pictures crammed.
Right
in the center.
Section, and then you always have to flip back and forth.
Correct. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And if the book has success, you know, you reap the profits and not the, because I'm the publisher.
Right.
I was also on kind of a time schedule. It seemed like if you go with a normal publisher, you know, you get put in a queue and it might be a year or 2 years before your book ever gets published. And I was kind of on a deadline because I wanted the book completed prior to the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Belgium, for that trip, because I go over for those celebrations. I've been to Belgium 5 times.
Wow.
Oh, great.
Well, I like to always talk about personal things. So I'm just thinking about how your dad wrote, and you said in the beginning it was letters to your mom, correct?
Right.
So think about how important that was for your mom to get this information, detailed information about your dad's life. I just think that must have made her feel like he was closer. I mean, it's one thing when you hear about people getting letters, but you don't really hear what the day-to-day life is like. But that must have been very important for your mom to hear what was exactly going on with your dad's life. So that's what a wonderful father you had.
Yeah, he was a pretty good writer, too.
Well, that must be where you got it from, yeah.
Yeah, got some of it from him. But those letters were amazing. And they were just sitting in a box until after I retired. And they'd only been married about a year and a half when he went overseas. They kept in touch quite a bit.
That's great. Letters. So you never got to talk to your mom about the letters?
No. Since my dad was the first pilot and as such kind of the commander of the plane and the crew, after they were shot down and missing in action, my mother was kind of the point person for the other relatives of the other crew members. And so she kept a lot of those letters. And there's excerpts from all the letters that my dad wrote and from other crew members and relatives of the crew that are in the book that make it very personal.
Yeah, this is just fascinating.
Yeah, it's great that your mom kept those letters and that it all kind of fell into place there.
Yeah, it was wonderful. You really get the feeling for the pain that the wives or the mothers or the families were going through when they didn't know whether these guys were alive or dead or if they'd ever see them again.
So how long was your dad missing in action?
He was missing in action for 7 months.
Okay. Wow, that's long.
But he evaded capture. He was hidden by Belgian people for a while, and then he got tired of hiding, so he joined the French resistance and started sabotaging German convoys.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah. But the book's just not about my dad. It's about what happened to each member of the crew, because something different happened to each of the crew members. And it's also about those unbelievably brave Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help them.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's incredible right there.
And so have they read the book? Have you been in touch with their families?
Well, yeah, some of their families. All my dad's helpers are gone now. I was fortunate to meet a couple of them in 1994 when I first took my initial trip to Belgium. There's only one of his helpers that are still living now. He's in his late 90s. But there's family members of some of them that I stay in contact with and see when I go to Belgium.
So what about the book cover? Did you hire someone to design the book cover, or did you design it?
Well, it was my idea to put the picture of the crew. B-17 had a 10-man crew, and they always took their crew pictures when they first got to England. Okay. They're pretty neat pictures. And so I kind of wanted that on the cover. But then I left it up to a designer, Nick Zellinger is his name, to come up with kind of the colors and overall design of the book cover, which turned out really nice. I told him my idea and sent him the crew picture, and then we went back and forth a few times on, you know, fonts and then the colors used. And he put a picture of B-17 on fire, you know, coming down to give that feel of the, you know, shot down. And I was really pleased with what he came up with, so I just stuck with his ideas.
So going back to starting your own publishing company, do you have any advice for somebody who might be listening thinking, hey, I've got a book that's sort of unusual and maybe I should start my own publishing company?
It's, I guess, a more complicated way to do it, and probably it's a little more expensive doing it. But I had confidence in this story that once the book was published, that it would sell and be popular. Although, you know, being an independent author, the big challenge is and always will be getting exposure for your book, because no matter how good it is, if people don't know about it, they're not going to read it.
Right. So what are you doing to help get the word out?
Since writing this book, it's basically changed my life. And I basically am working full time again promoting the book.
Wow.
That's fun. My wife. I spend hours every day on the internet, contacting anyone who might buy the book or promote the book. I go to air shows all around the country, signing copies of the book. I developed a PowerPoint presentation, so I do a lot of presentations to all sorts of groups around the country. I entered every book contest I came across. I entered. I contacted newspapers about reviewing it, professional reviewers, contact people about speaking or being interviewed. I'm totally passionate.
Sounds like you're sending out a lot of copies. Well, what have you had the most success with?
I'm really active on Facebook. I have both a personal page and an author page on Facebook. And so I've joined, all sorts of different Facebook groups. There's a lot that are related to, World War II or the Eighth Air Force, but there's lots of just book pages and groups. And so I post on Facebook a lot. And also I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I post videos on YouTube all the time. They're probably all under 5 minutes. And I just kind of talk about, I'm here at this air show in Dayton, Ohio. And I have, show some pictures of planes. I'm here to sign copies of my book that are being sold by, the Air Museum there. And so they're all little, they're kind of interest about the air show, but I'm also plugging my book at the same time.
Yes, I saw some of your videos on YouTube and they were very well done. I like how you're right there and you're like, here I am today. And it was done. You did a nice job.
Yeah, I never thought about doing it. My youngest son, who's an actor, said, you should do videos. And at first I was kind of leery of that, like self-conscious. Going, well, can I do this? So I tried one, at first I was pretty nervous. But then the more you do, the more comfortable you become with it. Just like when you're making presentations and speaking in front of groups, the more you do it, the more comfortable you become.
Sure.
And so that's been a kind of a fun little thing to do.
You mentioned signing them at an air show and then leaving them at the bookstore of an airport. Do you do that a lot? Do you leave copies with smaller bookstores?
Most of the air museums around the United States have gift shops, and so most of them sell books in their gift shop. So I contacted them, lots of them, about carrying my book in the gift store.
What happens when you contact them? Do they say, send us 10 copies, send us 5 copies, or?
It varies, it's just like anything else. some I never hear back from, some say, no, I'm not interested. But I had the advantage of being in sales for 40 years, so I'm used to approaching people and used to getting a lot of no's and doors shut in my face, so that doesn't bother me.
Right, you just continue to the next one, right?
just plug along, just keep plugging.
That's good advice to authors also, that just keep plugging away. Just because someone says no doesn't mean you should stop.
You're not being rude about it, you're just being persistent, and you really have to be independent, because most of these museums or even bookstores, I think, I contact them periodically. Do you need some more books? Do you need some more books? Because they'll run out and they'll never call me.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be the one that calls them. And so, and they go, oh, yeah, send me 10 more books, or send me another case of books. Or
right.
Some of them call me, but others I have to call them. But then I attend these air shows that they're associated with, and then we sell a lot of books at those air shows.
Oh, so I bet. I bet.
So just curious about when you're working with a gift shop and they say, send me 10 books, do they pay you right away, or do you get paid once those 10 books sell, or how does that deal work?
Once I ship the books, or once the books are shipped from the fulfillment house, I typically, if it's 12 books or less, I send them to the entity, and if it's over 12 or 24 in a case, then I have them shipped from my fulfillment house. But once they're shipped, then I send an invoice to the bookstore, the museum, or catalog, or whatever it has to, it happens to be. And then depending on their payment schedule, whether it's net 30 or net 90, then I eventually get a check.
Yeah.
So Steve, is your book available in hardback and paperback, or? And what about e-readers?
My publishing company that I formed, so I publish in the hardcover book, And then it's also available as an ebook in all the various digital formats. And then I decided I needed to have a soft cover book too, because there's some channels that I just couldn't get into on my own, even though it's distributed. The hardcover is distributed through Baker & Taylor, who is one of the largest wholesale book distributors. But Ingram is the other one, and they'll only distribute books if they don't print it. You can have it printed through Ingram. But if you're an independent author that had to publish the book in another format, you have to have 10 titles before they'll distribute your book.
Oh.
Yeah. And so they had access to certain channels that I couldn't get into. So I decided to print a soft cover book through Ingram Spark. And that was just all online. And that was a good way to go. It's a print on demand type of situation. But I'm really glad that I did that, because you know, they print the book and I get a check in the mail every month. So that was a good idea for me to have a soft cover and then have Ingram, you know, put it in bookstores or what have you that I didn't have access to. And then I also had an audiobook made as well.
How did you set all that up?
I thought it was going to be a lot more expensive than it was to do an audiobook. And I used a narrator, a professional narrator. I didn't narrate it myself. But it was kind of arduous, because he would send me a chapter at a time, and then I'd have to listen really closely as I was going to read the book to make sure it didn't make a mistake. And my book has all these words and names and places in German and French, because it was all takes place. So that was a real challenge. But that's turned out to be a really neat avenue as well, because more and more people are listening to audiobooks. And as a result of that, I started listening to audiobooks as well.
And is it available on Audible?
Yes, either Audible and also iTunes.
Oh, that's great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And was it difficult finding the professional voice to record it?
Well, my book consultant, Judith Bryles, suggested a narrator. But then I went on, you can go on Audible and you can listen to all these different narrators, you know, to make sure that,
that you're happy with how they sound.
And, you know, I wanted a guy to write, to narrate my book, because, you know, it's all about these guys. And
Sure.
After I listened to a bunch of them, but then I thought the guy that was recommended to me was sounded the best. So I went with him. And you can either pay a lump sum up front to the narrator, and then you get all the proceeds from any sales, or you can share in the proceeds or in the sales with the narrator. It depends whether you want to pay them up front or have them share the cost. I decided to pay up front, because then if the audiobook sells, you get all the profits.
Sure, right. And I would think for the artist, it would probably be better to get paid up front, so they know that they're at least getting X amount, as opposed to someday I might get X amount.
Right. The problem with the audiobook is that there's no pictures. And in the ebook, I could only put 24 pictures in the ebook.
Really?
Yeah, as opposed to the over 200 that are in the print book, in the soft cover, hardcover. Oh. So that makes a difference.
So do they do that just to make the file so that the file isn't outrageously big and takes up all the space on your Kindle? I see.
Right.
Well, what about having a link to a web page or something and then being able to see the rest of the photos?
You know, I have photos on my website, but, you know, you've just given me an idea. I could put a page that has all the photos by chapter that are in the print book. I hadn't thought about that.
That's something to do tomorrow.
Yeah, so that's actually a pretty good idea.
Well, then maybe the link is just on the Kindle version, so that's the only way you can get there, or the e-reader version, you know, so it's not just available to everybody.
But there's a lot of people that they'll buy the audio book and the print book so they have the pictures, or the ebook, because, you know, they like reading on their Kindle, but then they want to see all those pictures, because, you know, reading the print book with all those pictures, you can visualize everything you're reading about, which makes it nice.
Yeah, those are some good customers.
Yeah.
Buying two versions.
Well, it sounds like this whole process has been a very fulfilling one, personally and professionally.
Oh, yeah. It's as I mentioned, it's changed my life. And I have so much fun going to all these different events and meeting new people all the time. It's really enjoyable.
What do your children think about the process?
They and my wife are pretty amazed at what this has become. I'm going to try to make a documentary. My youngest son is helping me with that.
Oh, that's great.
That's a long process, though.
Well, they must be proud of Dad with his number one bestseller on Amazon. So how did that come about? How did you do that?
That's an interesting process. Amazon is interesting to do business with. Anyway, the price of most people don't realize that Amazon changes the price of my book or any book every single day.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah. Amazon, they pay the author 45% of the retail price of the book. It doesn't matter what they sell it for. If they sell it for the retail price of the book, like the retail price of my book's $27.95, but they can sell it for $27.95. They can sell it for $16.95.
Huh.
But I get, any author gets 45% of the retail price of the book.
Well, that's good. At least you get the retail price. Good.
And it's funny, they'll go, oh, only three left, or we're out, and which isn't true at all.
Is it up to you to send Amazon the books, or do they just contact the fulfillment center and ship from there?
They either send an email to the author. Actually, they send it to me and the fulfillment house. And then the fulfillment house sends them the books to whatever warehouse they want it to go to.
Okay, interesting. And then what about the 25 National Book Awards that you've won? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, it's probably it's 30 by now. But as I mentioned, whenever I see a book contest, I enter it. Some of them don't charge. Some of them charge maybe, you know, $40 or $50 to enter your book. But I think it, you know, for me at least, it's been worth the money, because if you get awards, you know, that gets people's attention. There's lots of different book awards out there. You can just Google, you know, independent book awards.
And then for each one, you need to like write up a little synopsis or fill out an application for the contest.
Yeah, typically you have a little entry form you fill out online, and then you send them a copy of your book, and several months go by, and there's all sorts of, you know, there's a multitude of different categories. Mine's nonfiction. You can go down from there, you know, history, military, World War II. Typically I found my niche in doing, you know, nonfiction, historical military books.
Right. That sounds like a great idea, because then that's just even more people who hear about your book. Because they see who won the contest, or they see who's in the contest, and then that just spreads the word even more.
Exactly. It's all about getting exposure. Also, it depends on the reason that a person's writing their book. If you just have a story that you want to get out on paper, and, you know, then probably the best way to do it is, you know, do a print-on-demand type of publishing, either through Amazon or Ingram Spark. But if you really are passionate about wanting your book try to become known nationally, then you really need to put a lot of effort into it, and you can't get discouraged. Although, you know, the result sometimes doesn't come as quick as and as fast as you'd like it. But just contact anybody that might be interested in the book. You know, reviewers, anyone you can think of, any type of organization. It could be a service organization like, you know, the Kiwanis Club or the Lions Club, or you can speak at libraries.
Mm-hmm.
Most libraries have little speaker programs, you know, that weekly or sure. And also mm-hmm. bookstores.
For like a book signing or something like that?
Yes, exactly.
Well, Steve, what advice do you have to somebody who's thinking about writing a book? Do you have any good advice?
You know, for me, I couldn't have written this book if I was still working full time. That's a big factor right there. Because
mm-hmm.
you have to, because when I started writing the book, I was at it, you know, all day, every day, and it took about 12 months to actually write the manuscript.
Wow. So it really was a 1 year full-time job.
Yeah. It depends on a person's situation and, you know, how much time you can devote to writing. But if you have a story that you're passionate about and feel people need to read about, yeah, just stick with it and stick with it. Don't give up.
Yeah, that's good advice, because I think that's the problem. There's so many people who want to write a book and so many people who start writing a book. But I read the other day that only 3% of books that get started ever get published. So I think you're absolutely right. You got to stick with it. You got to keep on going.
And although there's millions of books that are published every year, you know, there's always unique stories about whatever topic or subject that you're writing about. That little different twist, you know, that could be successful.
That could be it. That could send you to the top. Well, Steve, what's a good way for our listeners to get in touch with you if they want to drop you a line?
My email address is steve@stevesnyderauthor.com. That's my website address as well, stevesnyderauthor.com. So you can go on the website. If someone wants an autographed book, they can buy it on my website, on the homepage of my website. If anyone wants to call me, I get people sending me emails or letters or calling me on the telephone after they read
really?
The book. Really? Yeah. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah, it has to be fun to hear the reactions from readers.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And, you know, on my website or in the book, you know, it has my email address, it has my telephone number, so anyone can call me. And I have people who contact me about writing books.
The phone number that you have there, it's just your regular phone number, just your cell number, your house number, and you don't mind people just calling out of the blue?
No, that's my cell number, is area code 562-355-0461. I'm in California, so I'm on Pacific time.
That's great. You know, because when you read a book or you listen to an album or you enjoy a TV show and you think, well, that would be so cool to be able to talk to that person. You know, people think of you as a star, right?
Yeah, I can call them. This is great.
I'm going to give that guy a
call. I'm very accessible. Yeah, I'm very accessible, and I'm just a little author out there who's trying to, who wrote a book and trying to get people to know about it.
Well, congratulations! What a nice opportunity for you and for your father, I'm sure.
Well, thank you very much. It's really, really fun to do. I really enjoy it. It's like I say, changed my life.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us, Steve.
Well, thanks for the invitation. It was really fun talking with you.
We hope you liked Steve's story. And if you did, please share his story on your Facebook page.
Or with one of your friends who might enjoy it. And until next time.
Right on.
Thank you for listening to the Author Inside You podcast with your host, Leah and Matt Rafferty.